Hey, podcast listeners, this is Todd Finley, the founder of HBCU Grad. On this episode, I spoke to two HBCU grads who have developed a unique service and their alcohol delivery service. So I really think you'll enjoy this. It's a high energy episode and it's a really relatable episode. So hope you enjoy.
All right. We have two special guests here. We have my frat brothers here today. We have Michael Piles and Navar Grievous of Quick Lick. Welcome, guys.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right. You guys tell me a little bit about Quick Lick, just to give us an overview of what Quick Lick is.
Yes, I'll give you an overview of Quick Lick. So Quick Lick, we started in 2011, right after Michael and I graduated from Clark Atlanta University. Was actually at a social gathering, having a great time, enjoying ourselves. And the party was starting to die down because there was no more liquor left. At the time, my hands were full. Nobody wanted to, you know, leave the party to actually get the liquor. So we thought, what if we had like a phone number at that time we can call where the liquor store can deliver the alcohol, or a website we can go to that alcohol can deliver it to the party. But in 2011, that wasn't the case. It wasn't possible. This is before, you know, Uber Eats, Postmates, Jersey at the time. So it was a lot of red tape and legality in regards to alcohol delivery. So in 2011, Michael and I put our heads down and started, you know, to map out the name, Quick Lick, the mission, the vision, and a lot of all the, you know, just the grunt work that needs to get done to run a company. It wasn't until 2018 when alcohol delivery became legal in the state of Florida. So third-party companies like Quick Lick can now make deliveries for liquor stores to the customer. When that happened in 2018, you know, it was like a light that went off, like a light switch that went off. Michael and I put our heads down, started making this company become fully operational. Thus far, you know, if you fast forward to today, 2020, we have a full team. We have a CFO, CMO, a tech, CTO, and a lot of all from the HBCU connection that we made at Clark Atlanta University, Morehouse. Our team is comprised of. But it's been a blessing because in 2011, when we first thought of Quick Lick, we thought of it just being an alcohol delivery company. But as we got more into the market and started to understand our clients and more so the liquor stores that we partner with, we started to see that was a huge void in addition to just alcohol delivery, but them having an online presence. They had no website, no phone number. So it was a huge void for us, getting them up to speed in the tech world. So in addition to us making alcohol deliveries, we became an online platform for everything that's beer, wine, and spirits that encompassed. So, you know, we do blogs, we have Quick Lick recipes. We also, you know, have a platform that we partner with brands like Island John Vodka, which is a Black-owned Caribbean-made vodka. That they have the only apple vodka on the market. But we partner with brands to give them, you know, different exposures to our clients here in the Miami area. So we've really a one-stop shop for everything that beer, wine, and spirits encompass.
Nice, nice. Now, what was your experience like at Clark? I want to go there first.
Man, I'll start off. How much time we got? At Clark Atlanta, man, you know, it was the best decision I ever made. I can't even lie. The best 4 years of my life, I always say it. I grew up in Southern California in the Los Angeles area. And my whole life growing up in California, I actually grew up like in the suburbs. There weren't a lot of Black folks in my neighborhood and all that. So when I got the chance to go to college, I wanted to go to an HBCU. You know, at that time, back in 2005, 2006, when I was looking at colleges, the ATL was popping, right? You had movies like Drumline coming out, ATL, you know, with T.I., all the Atlanta music was on fire. Like, that's back when Soulja Boy, Young Jock, you know, everything was rocking out the A. So, and then, you know, you look at the band culture and all that, I was like, you know what, I got to go to an HBCU. And Clark Atlanta, they ended up giving me a full scholarship. So it was a no-brainer at that point. It was like, all right, you know, I'm going straight to CAU. And I'm so grateful that I did, because not only did I have the incredible, invaluable social experience where I was able to pledge my fraternity, Cap Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated in 2008, but also just that whole energy of being immersed in an HBCU like Clark Atlanta with so much rich history and so many like-minded individuals that actually look like me. You know, seeing the cream of the crop, the talented 10, all together in one place, striving for their dreams, achieving ambition, dreams of grandeur, you know, for all of us to be in one spot, it was an amazing, amazing experience. And it really led to the man, the businessman that I am today. And I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah, and I was just, you know, second, you know, exactly what Michael said. You know, for me, going to Clarkland University, the big thing for me was just more so the experiences and the relationships that I got from Clarkland University. Going there, I got the chance to study abroad in China. That experience was priceless, really, you know, changed my whole mindset when it comes to business and how, you know, they interact with business and compared to us. Clark also pledged Cap Office Opportunity Incorporated, which, as you can see, you know, definitely changed my life, you know, for a long haul. I have a brotherhood that's not going nowhere. Michael and I, you know, we pledged in spring 08. We still, you know, talk every day, best friends, business partners, and, you know, we're in 2020. And that relationship, you know, stimulated from Clarklanta. So just, I would say, overall, the relationships that I've gathered from Clarkland University, like I said, when I look at the QuickLit team, a lot of the team is from Clarkland University. So those relationships that I made at Clark is just black excellence. Nothing else you can say, black excellence.
Mikal, why did you choose to pledge Kappa instead of another fraternity?
So Kappa is the only fraternity I've ever known. You know, I don't know. I hear there's other frats, but all I've ever known is KA Psi to the day I die. So in all seriousness, I'm actually a legacy. So my dad is a member of Kappa Alpha Psi as well. He's a new, my pops pledged in the spring of 1975. So he's Eta Zeta chapter, the University of California, Riverside. So when I say that Kappa is the only organization that I knew, I'm actually for real with that. Obviously, you know, much respect to the whole Divine Nine, you know, but I grew up a legacy, you know, literally I was one of those babies that had the onesies that said Future Nuke on it, you know, so yeah, I really had no choice. It was in my heart from day one. And pledging at Clark Atlanta University, that man, you know, because you can go to school, but you never know how your chapter is going to be or what the timeline is going to be, what the experience is actually going to be like, because everybody's chapter is different. Every school is different. And when I tell you that pledging at Gamma Kappa chapter, which is the chapter at Clark Atlanta, man, it was a paradigm shift. I mean, it completely changed the whole trajectory of my life. I was already a high achiever. I was already an ambitious young man. But the confidence pledging KSI at Clark Atlanta took me to that next level and really polished me, man. And I remember every second of it. I pledged for 10 weeks, one day, 23 hours, 48 minutes and 38 seconds. And each second of that, you know, led to who I am today. So
what time did you cross? I crossed at 4:48:21, April 9th, 2004.
I crossed at 11:48 with 38 seconds.
Yes, what about sir. You? We don't want to leave you out of this new conversation.
No, you know, 10 weeks, one day, 23 hours, 47 minutes, and 13 seconds. Crazy. I can't remember that. But like Michael was saying, for me, it was different. You know, I wasn't legacy. I was the first person to actually really to go to college and graduate from college in my immediate family. So fraternity, it was all a new thing to me. You know, seeing Sigmas, Qs, Kappas on campus, you know, I was just learning about it, but I knew there was prominent leaders on campus. So for me, it was just more so looking at, you know, the frats that was on the yard and kind of figuring out which one I identify more with. At that time, obviously, you know, the Kappas was what I gravitated towards. But like Michael said, this process that we went through in each chapter has a different process they go through. But, you know, our process really, you know, shaped us to be the men that we are today. And, you know, I wouldn't take it for granted at all.
Our bond is still alive and well. You know, we started this business together right out of college. And if it weren't for pledging our organization, I think we still would have been great individuals and great businessmen, but we might not have a legacy and a brand like QuickLit, because that's the brainchild of two brothers getting together and saying, we want to change the game. And that sort of connection, that sort of bond that me and Navar had, which led to the creation of our company, that was formed, you know, on the that was formed in the burning sands, man.
Yeah. Yes, sir. That's what I like to hear. Yeah. Look, I want to go a little bit back into you guys' background a little bit. And because I really just always just want to bring as much value to, because we have a lot of small businesses that listen. Then we have some HBCU grads, people that want to get into business. And I know right. You worked a little in supply chain. What did you learn in supply chain that could help small businesses be more efficient?
Absolutely. That's a great question. So I cut my teeth in the supply chain field. That's what I got my business degree in. I got a degree in business administration with a concentration in supply chain management. And my first job out of Clark Atlanta was to be an assistant buyer for Target's corporate headquarters. And so supply chain, logistics, buying, my analytical responsibilities were at the nexus of all those areas. And so when you think about supply chain, on a business level, you're pretty much thinking of how can I get products from point A to point B, which is the store or the customer, you know, whatever your business is, in the most efficient way possible, the most cost-effective way possible, and make that process streamlined so that it's scalable as well, right? So working at Target, It was a culture shock, man. First and foremost, when I was at Target, you know, their headquarters is in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So you're taking a guy from sunny Southern California who went to college in Hotlanta, right? And then you're throwing them in this corporate environment in the Midwest in Minneapolis, which is like the Arctic tundra, right? So navigating those waters, Todd, was crazy because I'm 22 years old. I'm personally responsible for managing a $400-500 million portfolio in household commodities. So I was responsible for sourcing your Dawn dish detergents, right? And your Febreze air fresheners, things like that. And what it teaches you for all of those aspiring business people out there, all of those supply chain individuals out there, what it teaches you is how to take something on a micro level and dissect it to a granular level to where you can say, okay, this is how I interact with the warehouse. This is how I interact with the logistics and fulfillment trucks. This is how I interact with the store level. This is how I interact with the customer. And creating a stream from point A to point B that is just working like a well-oiled machine. And it's very collaborative, it's very intricate, it's very dynamic. But it pretty much can be done. You know, you just have to focus, take partners, and put your head down and get it done. And that's what I did.
And that helps. Navarre, want to talk about your background a little bit. You worked for one of the Big Four, and when auditing companies, what common thread did you see within successful companies? Was it all these companies were organized? Was it that they were driving revenue? Was it that they were controlling costs? What did you see from really diving into the numbers from an external perspective?
Yeah, well, I mean, as they say, anybody that's an accountant, they tell you accounting is the language of business. If you know accounting, you know business. There's no, you know, business without accounting. So like you said, one of the big things, you know, what I had to realize as being an entrepreneur is organization, being, you know, organized. These big companies, they're organized, you know, from top down, you know, everything streamlined, like Michael said, from A to Z, and you see it documented for how you get from there. So understanding that, looking at the books, and like I said, accounting is the language of business. So the company has to be profitable. Understanding that, you know, there is, you know, your business can't, it has to be profitable. So you had to know what numbers make sense in order for the company to be profitable. And looking at their books and just seeing how organized they was, you know, it helped us, you know, kind of, you know, cut costs with a lot of things because, you know, we're not jumping through a lot of different hoops in one central location. But I would say just, you know, just the organization of all their books that they had where it was easy readable for customers like myself to understand their books.
Makes sense. Michael, I want to talk about something that has been happening, and I know you're into it because of, you know, you're in the wealth building. What do you think about all this that's going on with Robin Hood and AMC movies and GameStop and everything going crazy? Because I had a conversation in the barbershop about stocks, and once it gets to the barbershop, I'll start to kind of side eye a little bit, like, oh, I don't know what's going on here. What do you think about what's going on these last couple of days here?
Oh, man, I think it's amazing. I think it's absolutely amazing. Well, I think what's happening is, in fact, I know what's happening is a public revolution, right? So you know, Malcolm X is famous for saying chickens coming home to roost, right? That's what's happening with society when it comes to the investment game. And it's a beautiful thing. For far too long, major companies and corporations have been monopolizing access to investing and to trading in the market and to basically accruing wealth, right? And so now we're in the age of digital revolution. Everyone has a smartphone. Even in third world countries now, we're seeing people with smartphones, which is a beautiful thing because it gives the average citizen access to the world, access to the world economy, the global economy. And so what you're starting to see right now, Todd, is you're starting to see millions of light bulbs going off with people like, oh, okay. So this is how, you know, these hedge funds are making billions. This is how, you know, your big business magnates are making their fortune. And people are starting to learn. They're starting to get on YouTube and Reddit, and they're starting to have conversations that need to be had, by the way. So when you look at AMC, GameStop, you know, this whole Robin Hood revolution, It's a beautiful thing, and I encourage people to go to YouTube, read, learn, reach out to someone that you know that's in finance, because now, more than ever, the common, everyday, average person has access to creating wealth through these platforms. So I love it.
That's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing, and I like how you explained that, and everything is coming back to roost. Navar, you did some recruiting, correct?
Yep. I did finance and account recruiting.
What signs let you know if someone will excel in a specific role that you're recruiting for? Because that's been one of my issues is recruiting, building a team. Building a team is hard, you know?
It's extremely hard. I think, you know, that's really what we've been blessed with. I tell, you know, I say every day we have an all-star team. And it really comes from, you know, a lot of the finance and accounting recruiting that I did as a headhunter, you know, for Fortune 100 and Fortune 500 companies and looking to find out. So, you know, most importantly is, you know, I make sure that whatever role I'm recruiting for or looking for, they have industry related experience. You know, that's important because, you know, you got to understand the jargon. You don't want to be lost in the sauce, you know, and sort of thing, because tech has their own jargon. You know, a lot of industries have their own jargon. So you got to make sure that they're industry related experience. Then it's a relationship. Everybody, you know, there's tangibles and there's intangibles. You know, obviously you can teach people the tangible things that's needed for the role, but it's the intangible things that they possess. You know, do they have, you know, ambition to do more and above beyond what's, you know, what's the call of duty for them to do? And that's all you find it out through interviewing and finding out, you know, building a relationship. So for me, I like to, you know, for me, I never, you know, hired or even, you know, put anybody in front of a company without me physically meeting them face to face. I had to, you know, understand who you are as a person, how you present yourself, if you're a professional, polished or whatnot, so that we can work on that and go from there. So it's building that relationship and having that industry related experience is really the two things I look for when growing a team. And like I said, I think from where we're at, from the CFO, you know, our CFO, CPA, works right under the CFO for our SEC. And then, like I said, our CEO works for Amazon and supply chain, Mikel, you know what he does. So I think for our company right now, we have an all-star team and they all have industry-related experience and, you know, they have the ambition to want the company to do more.
How do you all work together? Because you guys had a relationship before this, and then a lot of times friends or line brothers, fraternity brothers get into business and kind of butt heads. Do you guys separate your duties? Do you guys talk all the time? Do you text all the time? Give me a feeling of how you guys work together and make sure that we stay professional, but at the same time, maintain your relationship.
Yeah, so we just like you said, we text all the time, we talk all the time. You know, we do it all. In order to be, as an entrepreneur, in order to be successful, right, you have to live, sleep, and eat your business. You just have to. You can't do it half-cocked, because while you're messing around and playing games, there's a million other people trying to get in your lane, right, and take your opportunity. Me and Navar, we were so fortunate, Todd, because we had a lot of practice, right, in school. Like, we were fortunate because not only did we go to school together, but we also pledged a fraternity together. So being in a fraternity, and you already know, Kappa Alpha Psi, you gotta be locked in, right? And that's how me and Navar were. We were, you know, we were taught don't ever let anyone break your line. And so that bond that we created, especially in spring 2008, pledging together, it gave us a sense of how to communicate effectively with each other, how to stand in the gap of each other's weaknesses, right? So how to complement each other. And so after we crossed into our fraternity together, then we began to practice working together in different environments on campus. So Navar and I, we actually rechartered Toastmasters International, which is a public speaking, it's an international public speaking organization. And it was dead on our campus. It was actually dead in the whole AUC. And me and Navar rechartered that organization. I became the president. Navar became the vice president. So we learned how to lead people and manage an organization. Same thing with our chapter, our fraternity. I was the pomark of the chapter. Navar was the vice pomark. So we just had that experience in college that transcended and manifested itself now in the business world. So for us, I'll tell you, man, I'll keep it real to you. We fight and bump heads, you know, just like back in school. There's times where we go at it. You know, we curse each other out if we have to. But at the end of the day, we have the same common goal. Just like when you're pledging, you know, the goal is to cross the sands, to make it onto the golden shores, as we say, right? To get into the fraternity. That was the goal. Right now, building this company, our goal is to make QuickLick a household name. We want to be ubiquitous throughout the whole United States. We want everyone, when they think of alcohol delivery, to think of QuickLick, right? So when you think of ordering food, what do you think of? Uber Eats, Postmates. When you think of ordering alcohol, you think of QuickLick. And so me and Navar have that common goal in mind. So regardless if we fight or bicker or whatever, we always come back together to make this thing happen.
Right. Makes sense. Navar, tell me how important radical candor is. How important is it to say, hey, my Cal, you know, I don't like how you handled this? Or Navar, hey, you've been slipping, man. You know, I know we went out and hung out last night, but I need you up at 8 o'clock to do this. Talk to me about radical candor and how important it is to handle things on the front side with a partner.
Oh, it's very important. I mean, being transparent and open and allowing your team and partners know exactly what's going on. I mean, they say it all the time, without communication, there's no business. So you got to be in constant communication, you know, with your partners and allowing them, you know, constructive criticism, because you don't grow, you know, without constructive criticism. You know, even for me, myself, you know, as being a CEO, there's still a lot of areas that I can grow and grow upon and strengthen. And they come back to me every day, you know, even after this interview, going to tell me, you know, what I can sharpen up on and what I need to, you know, brush up on it and do better. And that's what I love about it, because I'm growing. You know, with this company, with QuickLick, I've grown so much and learned so much just from building this company, speaking with Michael, speaking with the team, and having that transparent conversation about, you know, our areas of weaknesses and areas of improvements and things of that nature. So I'm all for it. Like, you know, Michael said, we have arguments, we have good days and bad days. But it's all about being transparent and, you know, having that one common goal with QuickLick. And like Michael said, we want to be a household name. When you think of alcohol delivery, you think of QuickLick. So we continue to have that same focus and goal in mind, you know, us being transparent, whether, you know, it's constructive criticism that, you know, might not fit well with one of the team members, but it's all in the love, you know, all in the name of love of QuickLick. So, you know, for us, you know, we've had, you know, like I said, it's been a roller coaster, but, you know, I think the way we've been, you know, just hitting every task that we had on our agenda, and knocking it off, it's been working for us.
So how does QuickLick work? Do I have an app and I say I'm a Hennessy drinker and I say, you know what, I want a fifth of Hen and it's midnight. Can I just go in the app and just hit it? So walk me through how it works.
Absolutely. So we actually made sure that our product, our service is accessible to a wide array of customers, right? So you can actually call us on the phone. You can go to www.getquicklick.com, place an order online, or very, very soon, within the next week or so, you'll be able to go to our newly relaunched app, the QuickLick app, which you can find on all iOS devices on the App Store and order right from the convenience of your phone. So there's three easy ways to order: phone number, website, and an app. And let me tell you something. At QuickLick, we don't turn down any business. We don't turn down nothing but our collar. So you can hit us up on Instagram and we'll shoot you a link to work it out, right? So we make it super easy for our customers to order. And it's a really fast and efficient process, Todd. So let's say that you're at home, you want to get that fifth of Hennessy, you know, you're ready for a good weekend coming up and you got to have your favorite drink. All you have to do is hit up QuickLick, and within 45 minutes or less, we're going to be at your door with that bottle of Hennessy and a smile for you to enjoy yourself.
Is it going to be cold too? Because I like it minus two.
Okay. You can request that. Absolutely. We can do that. And if it isn't cold, you can order some ice to go with it. We got you.
Right. Sounds good. Now, I know you guys said it was, what was it, 2018 where alcohol delivery became legal in Florida? Was it 2018? Right. Okay. So what regulations are in place and what roadblocks have you had trying to just get over the red tape?
Yeah. So like I said, in 2018, it just became legal in the state of Florida. And even currently speaking now, alcohol delivery is not legal in all the states in the U.S. I think it's like 32 states now. And Georgia just became legal this year, you know, or last year, then the last year for alcohol delivery. So each state has different regulations in regards to, you know, what it is that you can have, you know, entry to make an alcohol delivery within that state. For us, and especially with expanding out to Georgia, the alcohol industry and these rules and regulations around e-commerce is all relatively new. So they're making rules and regulations around us and around Drizzly, around, you know, as we expand. So a lot of things, we're throwing stuff at the wall, and then now we're getting hit back, you know, with laws and regulations that's being put in place, you know, after we started doing things. So for us with Georgia, and why we haven't expanded to Georgia, you know, sooner is because, like you said, it wasn't legal for us to actually make alcohol delivery in the state of Georgia. And then in addition, in the state of Georgia, there's different like laws that are put in place. So for each driver in the state of Georgia, they have to be tip certified. That's not the case in Florida. Florida's more lenient. So every state has different, you know, rules and regulations that you have to abide by. And that's why, you know, we've been strategic with where we expand to. We're starting off here in South Florida, you know, going to West Florida and then going to Georgia. Now that it's eventually opened up in Georgia.
Right. That makes sense. So who was your first customer? Like, how did you make sure that the whole thing ran smooth outside of just you two?
If you want to say the first customer, it didn't run smooth. I'm going to be honest. It was like, oh, man, we really got to order. You know, it was like one of those things. Like, you actually do all the work. You know, you do a lot of things. And then when it actually happens, it's different when it's live order, because it's like stuff you don't, you know, take into account for, because, you know, it's a customer. And so, you know, they might say a request or say something that you never even thought of. But it's those type of experiences that help build the company to be where we are today.
Right. Yeah. And that's why I asked, because no, you never really fully understand what's going to go into it until you deal with that first live customer and you run into so many things. But that's where you learn. And you guys have been around since 2011, correct?
Right.
You know, and I don't think enough businesses understand that you need to take time to grow into something. So at now it's probably so refined. Now you're able to expand to Atlanta. Talk about some of the different learnings that you learned as far as dealing with the customers and refining your offerings.
Yeah. So one thing we learned is you have to be nimble when you have a startup business. You have to be flexible. When you're just starting in a business like this, you're gonna get all sorts of curveballs thrown at you. You know, as we've looked towards expanding to Atlanta, that was always one of the main places we wanted to go, because me and Navarre, we met in Atlanta. We went to school in Atlanta. We pledged in Atlanta. So we wanted to start off this business there. There was a time last year when Atlanta opened up briefly to allow alcohol delivery. Then it closed back down. So we went on this whole internal, you know, back and forth where it was like, okay, we can launch in Atlanta now. And then we were getting everything in place and then they shut it down, right? So how do you pivot? How do you adjust and keep the business going? You know, there's that saying, one monkey doesn't stop the show. And so when you talk about learnings, what I want everybody out there to understand with business is you can plan and prepare and sketch out your roadmap as much as you want. But the reality of the situation is it's never going to go like you envisioned it. So you have to be prepared to be nimble and to adjust quickly. And that's fortunately for us, we've been able to do that.
That's awesome. Yeah. So let's say we got, what do we have coming up? Valentine's Day coming up next month.
Yes, sir. And
I want to shoot my shot at someone. Can I send some liquor to someone if I'm in Miami?
You absolutely can. So you just hit the nail on the head. Quick Lick is launching our Shoot Your Shot campaign. Usually when I say shoot your shot, Navarre goes like that. I was waiting for it. Hey,
I was standing back in deep.
Flash. We actually have a campaign coming up, Todd, called Shoot Your Shot. And basically, this is just an innovative, creative marketing campaign, which allows customers to send a bottle or a couple bottles to their favorite person. So whether that's a love interest, whether that's someone that's celebrating a birthday or a promotion, you are able to send them a hashtag bottlegram, which is one of Quick Lick's unique hashtags. Look that up, guys. Hashtag bottlegram. Basically, the concept is just like back in school. Remember when you were back in school and you could send candy grams on Valentine's Day? You could send a special note to that special someone. You could do the same thing with Quick Lick. All you have to do is give us a call or go to our website and place your order and put in the delivery instructions either on the website or on the phone that you're sending a hashtag bottlegram, and we'll follow up with you for all the particulars on this, right? So Valentine's Day is going to be super special this year with all these people across Miami area and Atlanta being able to shoot their shot with Quick Lick.
That's dope. I love those types of activations where you're doing something that is historical. Everybody knows Valentine's Day, but adding something new to the mix as far as with technology, right, then tying it into your business.
Right.
So this last holidays, you guys landed in the Ebony Holiday Gift Guide. Let's say a business wants to do something similar. How would you suggest that they earn that same type of media?
I'll take that. So the first thing you got to do when you're a legitimate business and you're trying to get your name out there and establish a brand that has name recognition with huge historic publications like Ebony, you got to get yourself an A1 quality PR team. That's what you got to do, right? So I'm just keeping it real. You can do it on your own, Todd, but if you want to see results like getting in a coveted slot with Ebony Magazine and the Holiday Gift Guide, you need a strong PR team like we have. So just a shameless shout out to our girls at Lemon Limelight Media who have held it down for us over the past several months. They are getting Quick Lick out there and making Quick Lick a household name. That's first and foremost. And then the second thing I'll say is you got to create a buzz outside of the PR team. You know, they'll handle all the corporate media stuff. But outside of that, you got to get the name out organically, too. All too often, these businesses try to look to outsource everything, their marketing, their social media, this and that. What we found with our company is that by creating organic relationships with people, getting on the ground, passing out flyers, take it back to old school, shake some hands, kiss some babies. You know what I'm saying? You gotta create that buzz in the marketplace, and the opportunities are gonna come to you.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Navarre, what's your favorite drink and why?
My favorite drink, man. Crazy thing is, I stopped drinking as much as I used to, and I got a lot of alcohol inventory on hand. But I would say, my favorite drink is, I would say, I'm still gonna go with Hennessy. Hennessy. I got hooked after college. I think wasn't really the drink in college for us. I think it was more so Ciroc or Taka Vodka, something of that nature. But after college, you know, the bankroll stepped up a little bit, so I started to expand and try different liquors that was out there. And Hennessy was just one of those liquors that had a smooth taste. I could drink it, you know, on the rocks. Didn't have to mix it with anything. Didn't give me no bad hangover, no headache. And then from there, you know, it was smooth. Like I said, I was able to still fully function and operate. And like I said, Hennessy on the rocks for me is my drink, hands down.
See, that's a good CEO for you, because you know they say you can't get high off your own supply, right? So I love that answer, because that lets you know that we're keeping a clear head at the top of this business. For me, Todd, my favorite, I'm a tequila guy. I like to keep it on the light side. When I was younger, you know, in my 20s and stuff, I could do the brown liquor. But these days, I'm a married man. You know, I'm a business owner. So I got to keep it together. And the brown, that's something crazy. So I stick with the tequila, because tequila is more, for me, it's a fresher, more upbeat, kind of energetic sort of drink. And I like a good spicy margarita on the rocks.
Makes sense.
But I will say this. Go ahead. No, I was going to say, I will say this. So we do partner with a lot of liquor brands. And one of the brands we partner with is Island John Vodka. They have actually the only apple guava vodka on the market. Caribbean made and gluten-free. But it's a very smooth and good vodka. It's a brand that we've been pushing out here in the Miami market. And when it comes to vodkas, I'll say light vodkas or light liquor, this is my top choice. It has a very smooth taste. I'm like, I don't put the endorsement on a lot of brands, but this apple guava vodka is definitely, you know, something that's going to be a force to be reckoned with in the market.
Nice. What would you guys say is the most popular liquor that's ordered? Is it wine? Is it beer? Is it liquor?
Tequila. It's tequila. Okay. It's the trends of what you see on TV, the 1942 Casa Azul, even the Don Julio and Patron. But tequila has been selling through the roof for us. That's the top brand. Top
yeah. Right. Is tequila a party drink, or is it something that people are drinking while they're in quarantine?
Both, you know, that's the great thing about it. It's a light, you know, it has that bite, right? Depending on the tequila, it has that bite to it, but at the same time, it can be mellowed down, right? And it can be very refreshing and more of a chill drink. The thing with tequila is there's lots of different variations. So it's not just tequila is a one size fit all sort of spirit. You have your tequila blanco, you have your tequila reposado, you have your tequila añejo. So there's different variations depending on, you know, what you're going for. The more refined casual drinkers like the scotch types, they like that añejo because it's a lot, there's a depth of flavor. The tequila is aged in oak barrels and things like that. The process is a long process, just like scotch. But then you have your younger, you know, party goers turning up in Miami on the yachts and everything like that. Those are your Blanco drinkers, right? Or the Reposado, the 1942 drinkers. So the good thing about tequila is it appeals to different palates because there's such a wide range of options.
Sounds good. What's the long-term vision for Quick Lick?
Like Michael said, we want to be a household name. We want to cover the whole Southeast, you know, from not just Miami to West Florida and all over Georgia. And eventually, like I said, we'll be expanding to LA, but we want to make sure that Quick Lick is a household name. When you think of alcohol delivery, you think of Quick Lick. And like I said, we've been doing that, creating a wave out here in Miami. We're actually a household name out here in Miami. So we want to keep that trend going up to Georgia and expand out.
And if I could just add to that, we don't want Quick Lick to just be an alcohol delivery company or a digital marketing platform for alcohol. We want to transcend the business environment and make a true impact on the community as well. So when you talk about long-term vision for QuickLick, we want to have scholarship programs for HBCUs especially. We want to make sure that we're reaching out to the HBCU community and having internship opportunities for students to work with us to see what it's like to be an entrepreneur or a marketer or get with our finance team or our tech team and see how we do business. So long-term, we want to be a pillar of entrepreneurial impact in our communities, not just HBCU, but the Black and Brown community as well, because there's not enough people that look like us doing what we're doing, and we know that. So as we build the company, we're building that with the vision in mind.
I was just gonna say, this is summing it all up. We really are revolutionizing the alcohol industry. The alcohol industry was really composed of three different, stands. You have the distributor, supplier, and then the retailer. We're actually adding that fourth pillar of the e-commerce world. So we're, like I said, we're getting rules and regulations around us. But we really want to revolutionize the alcohol industry. So now that there's an e-commerce, pillar in the alcohol industry and not just those three pillars that I said before.
Looks like you guys are all about achievement.
You
and
already know.
Pillar, human endeavor.
Yes, sir.
That's a beautiful thing. I really appreciate the time that you guys have given us today. I really think that this is something that the industry needs, because I've been in situations where people want to make an order. And how do they make that order? So you guys are fulfilling a need it's a glaring hole. And you guys are Black men that come from an HBCU, and I truly wish you guys the best. Is there anything that you wish I would have asked?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the only thing that I want our brothers and sisters out there to know about us is that we are doing this to create a legacy for ourselves, our family, and our community. For us being entrepreneurs, it's not all about the money, right? Or the accolades and getting to be rich or anything like that. We actually take every part of this journey very seriously because we know that we're trailblazers in our families and our communities. We do have competitors out there, but none of our competitors, when you look at the owners, none of them look like us. That's just the reality of the situation. We need more Black and Brown people in tech. We need more Black and Brown people being entrepreneurs. That's what we need. And so we feel an immense obligation to our people, to our community, to succeed, because it's bigger than us. And we understood with our background that we talked about earlier, coming from the corporate environment, and even what we learned in HBCU, we understood that you can't really create generational wealth by working for somebody else, right? You just can't. I hate to say it, but no job, and this is not to, downplay having a good job and everything. You gotta feed your family, put food on the table, but no job is truly gonna pay you what you're worth. That's not what they're designed to do. If you wanna create generational wealth for your family and generations to come, you got to get into entrepreneurship. You got to get into investing, like we talked about earlier. Those are the keys to the kingdom of wealth that me and Navarre are trying to create for ourselves and our community.
Yep. And again, Michael and I definitely want to thank you for allowing us to share our story and our company on your platform. It means a lot. Like I said, it's huge for us to let Black and Brown people know that, they're successful people and, that look like them. In this world today. So thank you for allowing us to, share our story on your platform. Thank you so much. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
We'll always be here to support you, Navarre. Michael, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Really wish you guys the best. And I only have one request, because I've never had this before. And what Kappa comes in, right? Kappa comes in three. So I just want y'all to
shoot. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Hey, already. Yo to the news.
Yo.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys. You guys have a great one.
All right, buddy. You too.
Yeah.
Peace.
Yo.
All right. Hope you enjoyed the episode. If you haven't already, text HBCU to 91096. That's text HBCU to 91096 to join our text community. Thanks, and we'll catch you on the next episode.